Welcome to the Hero Cafe. My name is Sam Drake.
And I'm Cameron Bowes.
And I'm Dirk Wood from IDW PDX.
And this is Hero Cafe. So we've got Dirk from IDW here as our guest host. Dirk, tell the folks at home just a little bit about what you do, who you are, and where you're from.
Where do we start? So I've been in the business about 25 years, which shocks me to no end, but here I am. I worked for Dark Horse for a long time. I worked for Mike from 93 to 2010, so like over 16 years. And then eventually ended up making the move to IDW. Mm-hmm. And for 7 years, I was the VP of marketing down there. And then eventually, through we'll get into that at some point, I think, but ended up moving up here to Portland to start a satellite office, IDW PDX, and launched this crazy quarterly magazine called Full Bleed that I just put out. I love comics. I grew up on comics. I was born in 1970. When I was 8 or 9 years old, I had comics in Mylar, if you can believe that. Wow. I was an early comic adopter. You know, I ended up selling them all in high school for pot and girls, you know, like everybody else does, and rediscovered them in college, sort of the typical story, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, I quit right before I was 16. Of course, I was 16 in 1986, so you're talking Dark Knight and Watchmen and Mouse and all this stuff.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So I kind of missed out on that for about 5 years, came back during college and was like, what the hell happened while I was gone, you know? And so here I am. I've been lucky enough to have a career in comics thanks to, you know, a lot of people and keeping my nose clean and doing some hopefully good work. And I'm super psyched about where I'm at these days.
Cameron, what are we starting off with?
Sure. Well, let's start off with kind of the smaller scale news. There was really only two things over the last week that kind of tickled my fancy, as you would say. Mm-hmm. First off, Brian Michael Bendis has been tapped to write the Kitty Pryde movie. As we know, Tim Miller's not directing Deadpool 2. There was some behind-the-scenes things going on with that. And so he has stayed with Fox, but he's going to be directing this Kitty Pryde movie. I think that's a very interesting move. Brian Michael Bendis recently has, of course, shifted from the Marvel camp over into the DC side of comics. But he's still got a little bit of Marvel under his sleeve, it would seem. So he's going to be helping write the screenplay and story for that. So that's very interesting to see where that goes, of course, especially now that we have this big Disney-Fox merger possibly happening. So all of this is very interesting news. You know, it seems that Fox is still very much going in the direction of the X-Men as far as what they're going to continue to do in the movie side of the universe here. So anyways, that's kind of the first one there. What do you guys think about this?
I think it's really interesting. I think it lends to the fact that even though Brian Michael Bendis is kind of, at the end of the day, if you don't work for Marvel or DC, you're a freelancer, and you may have really strong professional connections with one or the other. And sometimes in special circumstances, you sign contracts, right? But at the end of the day, Brian Michael Bendis is a talented writer, and people are going to snag him for whatever projects they can. So this makes total sense. I think it's more news to me that they're deciding to do a Kitty Pryde solo movie. I'll withhold judgment on that until we get more details.
Sure.
But sounds like fun.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's funny. I was just having a conversation with my pal Jeremy Atkins about this, that he just watched the Deadpool 2 trailer, and we just sort of were kicking, you know, talking about the whole Disney Fox thing and where these movies are at, and realizing that, like, man, you know, Deadpool and Logan were two of my favorite of the recent movies on any side of this thing.
Yeah.
So it's, I think that I'm intrigued by it. I think Tim Miller doing it is very cool, and Bendis is a talent, so
definitely.
And yeah, I assume they're gonna go back. Was it X-Men number 143, I think, was sure that's gotta play a part.
Oh, yeah,
that,
yeah, you know. Easily. Yeah, well, I mean, they've got the talent behind it, you know, so it looks like it's kind of full steam ahead there. That's definitely something that Fox has been really good at lately, is, you know, getting that talent behind their projects, and it's something that they're trying to lock down with Gambit and everything. So yeah, definitely. Well, we'll keep you guys posted, of course, on any updates from that. That just kind of stopped by there. But really the big one, and the one that I think everybody kind of wants to talk about, is during the Winter Olympics last night, they decided to drop a little trailer for Incredibles 2. We've got very, very few footage from this movie, which already is coming out in June. And they've kind of dropped like a full minute and a half sneak peek is what they called it. But it was pretty much a full trailer. And it's got Mr. Incredible being Mr. Mom, it looks like, this time around. he gets to take care of the kids while Mrs. Incredible goes and takes care of business. So just from my point, like, I'm so excited about this movie. This has been obviously very long in the making. It's picking right where the second or the first movie ended. You know, they're dealing with, looks like, the minor right from the end of the movie. And then they kind of jump forward, of course, into what this is going to be about. It looks hilarious. It looks like the family dynamic is, once again, what we loved about the first movie. Jack-Jack obviously is causing a lot of problems for Mr. Incredible in this movie, which is one of the exciting things, of course, that happened in The Incredibles by the end. And so this looks great. It's got the laughs. It's got the heart of the family that the first one had. I'm sure this probably plays in front of Black Panther tonight, which is why they released it. Everything happens for a reason. I think it looks amazing, and June can't get here fast enough as far as I'm concerned.
The one thing about The Incredibles, you know, that was really before, I mean, this isn't breaking any new news, but that was before superhero movies really, I think, got it right. And so, like, it's going to be interesting to see how, like, Marvel, of course, has upped the game with all of their movies in terms of the way these things are portrayed. And so it's, you know, will it be as big a breath of fresh air as it was back when the first one came out?
Right.
It'll be, I mean, but, I mean, everybody is so fond of that movie.
Yeah.
And it's been wanted for so long. Like, yeah, I can't imagine it's not going to be great.
Exactly. And I mean, like, one of the things that, you know, Brad Bird, the director, he's been very vocal about how the boom of the superhero movies have kind of come about since Incredibles, and how, you know, he's having to direct this movie in that age now. And so it sounds like we're probably going to get a lot of commentary on the superhero genre, you know, as what it is now. So it'll be very interesting to see how this recent climate that we live in, and what is kind of the golden age of, you know, cinema when it comes to the superhero genre, and how that affects The Incredibles too, and how much different it'll be. You know, it looks like kind of a theme of this second movie, and kind of the is almost like a corporate overlords oversighting superheroes, right? And so even there, you can automatically kind of make a connection of, like, well, this is, you know, very much a social commentary of, like, what is happening in the superhero genre today. So I'm very excited about what Brad Bird has in store for us this time around with this family. So very cool. Sam, what about you? You've seen it last night too.
I was super excited, and honestly, the first thing that I said when I pulled it up, I showed my wife. My wife is a huge Disney girl, so, you know, she's 100% on board if anything new drops. And like, we were sitting there, we were watching it, and I'm like, this was the only thing I didn't expect them to do with this story. I did not expect it to go, Elastigirl, we want you out there, and to have most of the film, it looks like, is focused on Mr. Incredible adjusting to domestic life, which is like, it hits that family note that made the first one so special. But it completely blindsided me. I don't know why I didn't see it coming, but I'm really excited to see them do, again, something new, something different. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to see it.
All right. Well, I mean, that was really pretty much it for news. Obviously, we got Black Panther night. We're all, like, super excited about that. We're going to have all of our spoiler reviews and everything like that coming here in the future for that. So we can't talk about that now because we haven't seen it, but we're very excited about it. So anyways, what else we have on the slate for the show today, Sam?
Well, so what we've got next on our road to Infinity War, we're going to be talking about this week, the big one. We've got Avengers number one, which for a lot of people is their favorite Avengers movie. Cameron, I know you weren't as big a fan of the first Avenger Captain America as I was, but this one is definitely at the top of your list. So I'll let you get started.
You know, it's really crazy. This is 6 years since the first Avengers has come out, which is almost, it's crazy to think about. It really is how far the genre has come. But really what this movie did, right? What Iron Man was a huge success when it first launched. It did something that, you know, nobody thought was possible when it came to Marvel Studios, who was just Kevin Feige and a few friends, right? Creating this studio, basically making what was considered B-list character into something that was an instant movie star and huge blockbuster. And, you know, they had that tag at the end, right? With Samuel L. Jackson coming out and teasing the Avengers initiative. At the time, it was something that was just kind of fun, right? Like, post-credit sequences weren't really a thing. Like, it was something that was going to be for the fans, and it was really just kind of a dream at that point. You know, they had no idea if it was going to work. People responded in waves, you know, to that post-credit sequence. People went back into the theaters just to see it for the people that left. And then, of course, we had The Incredible 2 come out only 2 months later, and they got Robert Downey Jr. to film his cameo with General Ross there at the end, once again teasing it. And so it's just kind of, you know, it's been this step. It's been this whole journey that we've been talking about, right? Getting to the Avengers at this point. Then the Avengers did something that nobody thought was possible. It became the third highest domestic and total grossing box office movie of all time, which was unheard of for a superhero movie. You know, these movies have been a success. They opened at number one here in the U.S. and international, but nobody expected the Avengers to be able to do the numbers that it did. But just talking outside of numbers and what it did for the genre as a whole, this movie is just pure joy. Mm-hmm. To this day, you know, I there's been a lot of other Marvel movies, obviously, that have come out. And so it's hard for me to say that Avengers is maybe like the best out of all of them. But what I can say is it's still to this day my favorite theater going experience I've ever had in my entire mm-hmm. life. I remember, you know, as all of us, we were in college at the time, and we got our friends together. We made the trip, you know, 2 hours to go to the IMAX to go see this movie. For those of us in rural Kansas, you had to drive 2 hours to do that. And so we drove to the theater, and it was a packed house. You know, the seats aren't reserved seating at this time. You know, the theaters have changed. So we waited for hours, you know, to get into this movie for midnight. From the minute the credits opened to the minute the movie ended, there was just like nonstop cheering, laughing, you know, like fanboy tears like coming down.
Yeah,
you know, just things happened on the screen in the Avengers that nobody thought was possible. It was unprecedented for a superhero movie to combine characters that had their own movies together into one to do something that has now become a worldwide phenomenon. You know, Marvel Studios, they have their success story, but it really kind of, this was like the end of the prologue. Everything mm-hmm. else is chapter one after this, you know, like, no, again, it just, nobody could have ever imagined it. To see Iron Man come in and see these characters that we all read, loved, come together for the first time, and for it to work so well, you know, mm-hmm. has really kind of just blown my mind. And, you know, I remember sitting in the theater, and at that first post-credit scene, you know, when they show Thanos before Josh Brolin was even cast as him, he didn't say anything. But, you know, I remember, like, people around the theater, just fans of the movies, you know, a lot of people didn't know who Thanos was. You know, you had to read, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people had to read comics to know even who he was. And so it was so much fun just to be in the theater, just like, people like trying to, like, what does this mean, you know, and just the mystery of, once again, you know, the foresight that these guys have had all these years to come up with the idea of what they were going to do along the road has been really crazy and incredible. But man, this movie is just, there's so many good parts to it, but I've been rambling at this point, so I'm going to toss it over to somebody else. But again, it's one of those movies that I will endlessly watch to the end of day, just because it is so much fun. You know, it's one of those, I've watched the director's commentary, I've watched all the behind the scenes stuff, like I just soaked it all in, and it truly shaped the road for where we're at today when it comes to these movies. So
whenever I talk about this movie particularly, I'm a big guy, I like cheeseburgers, and everyone's been to one of those cheeseburger spots that's got to do like 27 different weird things with the cheeseburger, right? You know, they got to do some sort of bun, or they got to do some sort of sauce or some sort of patty material, right? And when I was watching this movie, the way that I described it in my head was, it's the perfect execution of the standard cheeseburger. It's the standard, right? They yeah. do everything just right. They hit all their notes pitch perfect. The pacing was exactly the way it needed to be. They didn't do anything fancy. No whiz bangs. You know, there's nothing crazy going on with the storytelling. Everything they set out to do with this movie, they did perfectly. And I can sit there and I can watch it absently in the background while I'm doing something, right? Or I can sit there and I can like really watch it and really do get that sense of joy out of just everything that's happening on screen. And it's to this day one of my favorites, and it's the and for a lot of people, including for me, it is the standard against all other superheroes movies must be judged.
No, I mean, yeah. It's totally true. It's just one of those movies that is, you know, they had a great character in Loki with the first Thor movie, right? Like, we talked about that movie a couple weeks ago and how it really sets up that relationship. And so it was really brilliant, you know, to kind of have this movie follow along with Loki and his mission with the Tesseract and everything like that for this movie. And once again, we didn't know at the time that it was the Space Stone, but it lays so much groundwork in the Avengers movie and gives so many hints to all of the different things that they eventually reveal, even with Loki's staff being the Mind Stone, which we didn't know at the time, but he controls Hawkeye with it. You know, and so it just, when you go back and look at it, it's just, it's really, really cool to see all of that stuff. Dirk, you're also a big fan of this movie, so what about you? What was your experience like when you went and seen this movie?
Well, I come from a unique perspective here. I probably missed the episode where you talked about Captain America, the First Avenger.
We did.
So I will tell you, that remains my number one all-time favorite Marvel movie. I love them all. I love sure. I absolutely love them all. I can't believe how, I mean, being a, you know, growing up a comic fan and seeing this stuff on the screen is so mind blowing. But for whatever reason, like, I loved Iron Man when it came out.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. And then I sort of just slid into whatever else I was doing. I missed Iron Man 2. I didn't see Thor.
Okay.
And then I saw Captain America and Hulk too. I skipped because I saw the Ang Lee one when it came out.
Sure.
And I knew there was the shared universe thing, but much like you guys, I'm sure I had no idea where that, just how crazy they were going to get with this thing.
Yeah.
And so, but it was the Captain America movie that really lit me up. I just thought they did such an incredible job, you know, making a war movie and a Captain America movie and, you know, bringing in the Tesseract. You know, the idea of a shared universe really happening started sinking into my mind at that point, especially mm-hmm. at the end, you know, when the end, when he pops out in Times Square and then there's Samuel Jackson. I was like, oh, holy shit. And so, you know, pardon my French, but that, you know, was such a great setup for Avengers.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, and that was the next movie, wasn't it?
It was.
Was Captain America. Right. And so, like, then when I saw the Avengers, and it just blew my mind. And more, now Captain America blew my mind in sort of this low-key movie kind of a way, whereas Avengers blew my mind in this giant blockbuster kind of a way, you know. And I had, at that point, I hadn't seen Thor. Yeah, you know, I hadn't seen Iron Man 2. And I was like, okay, like that. To me, it changed the entire ball game to the point where I was like, all right, now I got to go back and watch all of them twice. what's the deal with the Tesseract? You know what I mean? And basically, Avengers was the one that, like, once that hit, I was bought in completely. You know, and it's had its, I think, small ups and downs since, but mostly. Every single movie has thrilled me in one way or another. I will see, you'll get to this one later on, but I'm not the biggest fan of Age of Ultron. I thought that one had some problems. Although the Vision was still awesome and seeing him on screen, right. But, you know. Yeah. But Avengers, the first one, is pretty perfect. I mean, they really nailed all of it, from, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. to, like, having the reverence of Agent Coulson for Captain America, and the way they, you know, all the characters interacted. And, you know, even though I hadn't seen Thor, it was pretty easy to get him right out of the gate.
Yeah.
And Loki was such a great villain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and at that point, I didn't even know Loki was in the Thor movie. I was like, oh man, I got to go back now. You know, so.
Right.
But yeah, much like Cameron said, I mean, that's a movie, like, that is easily. If Saturday afternoon I flip on the TV, it doesn't matter what point of the movie you're at, I will watch it to the end from that point. You know, it's just too good.
It is. It's one of those movies that you just can't skip once you get started, you know. And you're right, like, you know, eventually we'll get into all the other ones. There are a few ups and downs throughout the MCU. They've never made a bad movie, but, you know, they have their lower points. I mean, Avengers was the written check for Marvel that this could work, right? And so now all the studios are trying to replicate its success. You know, everybody's trying to create their own universe, you know, because it was proof that a universe could work. And so, you know, we've had our already failed Dark Universe. We've had all this other stuff that's been trying to replicate their success now for the last 6 years. Yeah, you don't get that kind of impact throughout the industry without a movie like The Avengers. And it's, you know, again, its box office was insane at the time. You know, it had been a long time since anybody had crossed $1 billion, much less $2 billion. Titanic was the last one that had done it. And then Avatar.
Right.
Avatar, you know, James Cameron had the top two spots there for a long time. And then Marvel came out of the gate and kind of joined the pack. But, yep, they hit a home run. And it's really, it's cool to see how this movie affects the other movies, of course, in the future. I was, for Black Panther, I watched Civil War again last night just because he's introduced to that movie. And so it's fun for them to go back. And now they're kind of using the destruction, of course, of New York City as leverage against Captain America and the Avengers and everything like that. But at the time, when you're watching the movie, you're like, wow, these, you know, these people are saving, you know, the world, you know. So it's cool to see them even skew their own view of how the first Avengers movie went down.
Yeah.
Just for their stories, of course. But, you know, there's nothing like the third act of the Avengers movie to this day is, like, one of the most watchable things I've ever seen in a movie. Because in the movie, there's the action sequence where they go from hero to hero seamlessly. Like, it's one take. Mm-hmm. Iron Man's flying through the city. He flies around Hawkeye. Hawkeye shoots an arrow. You know, it hits a Chitauri, and the Chitauri falls in front of Thor and, you know, Hulk. And then the Hulk and Thor together take down the Chitauri ship, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's just this epic shots of, like, superhero orgasmic stuff that you just never thought you would see. And and then, you know, you have the Hulk and the Thor fight and the Helicarrier, which is, like, to this day, another one of my favorite scenes. Because it's, like, the first time that you get, like, two of the most powerful people in this universe going up against each other. And, you know, what's so great, of course, is they didn't just become a team automatically, right? Like, they're not a team until the end. So you get the fun interactions between all the characters leading up to that moment, you know, and they have their discord. You know, right away, Iron Man and Captain America are completely two different people. Mm-hmm. They do not get along with each other. They have very different ideals of how they're supposed to approach things. But they, because, you know, at the time, they had used Agent Coulson from the first Iron Man into pretty much every movie, you know, they used him as really perfectly, something that I didn't expect watching the movie. They used him as the glue to make the team, you know, when he dies at Loki's hand. And so it was, you know, it added that emotional heartbeat to it as well of like, okay, like we're fighting for a common cause at this point, you know. So, you know, you never feel like while they're a team, you also feel like they are their own individuals. They are kind of together to as one common enemy. But at the end of the day, when they go their separate ways, they're going to be their own superheroes in their own way. And so that's why it's really cool, of course, going into phase two and phase three, getting their separate movies, getting their different ideological views. That way, mm-hmm. when it leads up to the point now where the team is now split, you know, you have that arc. It's one big arc within other little arcs, and it's really satisfying what they're doing. But Avengers was kind of the start of it all, you know? That's what we keep saying. And the colors, you know, to this day, it's one of the most colorful superhero movies, you know, you know, things that were really, you know, after The Dark Knight, which Christopher Nolan, you know, he is amazing. And what he did with The Dark Knight was so incredible. Everybody wanted to replicate that success. You know, it's kind of one of Hollywood's biggest pitfalls is they try to copy other people's success. And so all of a sudden, all the superhero movies are trying to be dark and gritty, right? Well, right. Marvel has kind of tried to be that light at the end of the tunnel of like, no, like, there's two ways to do this. Like, mm-hmm. our colors are going to pop. You know, you're going to love what you see, and it's going to be psychedelic, you know, with Doctor Strange and all this other stuff. So it's really, really cool to watch the Avengers and see that, you know, Captain America now, his outfit is really adapted. But, you know, he's got this, like, almost like, this really bright blue outfit, very Boy Scout, right? And, of course, that's very mm-hmm. much that's very much changed from now here in the future, but it's so fun to go back and watch all that because, you know, Iron Man's got his first suit and, you know, Thor, he's still got, you know, kind of like that wig that you can kind of see through that Chris Hemsworth doesn't wear anymore. But yeah like it's fun to go back and watch all of that. And, you know, Loki, he finally gets to wear his classic Loki helmet that he didn't really wear much in the first Thor movie. So there was a lot of really cool comic touches, of course, that they added in there. And you know, they had to, you know, there was a lot of talk about how they had to use the Chitauri because of rights reasons. They didn't necessarily have, like, a lot of people thought they were going to use the Skrulls, and a lot of people thought they were the Skrulls for a long time until they had to clear that up. And so it's just a really fun movie. And it's, you know, it's over 2 hours long, but it's just one of those movies that, like, that fly by, and I never get tired of watching it ever, you know.
It's funny. Well, one thing you just said that struck a chord with me is that just sort of like how all the characters have their own moments within the team and that sort of. I think one sort of thing you used to hear a lot that you don't hear anymore, mostly because of the Avengers, I think.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, back in the days of the old Batman, you know, the Joel Schumacher Batman movies and stuff, one of the big complaints about those movies was that, oh, there's too many characters.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You've got to focus. You can't, you know, we can't have Batman and Robin and Batgirl and Mr. Freeze and whatever.
Right.
I think it probably was the first X-Men movie that kind of started putting that to bed.
Oh, yeah.
There was your first movie I can think of that had a ton of characters, but worked, you know, and this Avengers movie, I think puts that to bed completely.
Definitely.
And then now you look at, you know, we got I remember even 2 or 3 years ago, I was like, wow, how crazy would it be if your Guardians of the Galaxy showed up in an Avengers movie? Like, you know, like even a couple of years ago, that seemed like it would be too much. But now you're like, yeah, bring it on. That's like, they'll find a way to give, you know, how much screen time will the Wasp have? Yeah, I don't know. Probably not a ton, but they'll make it work, you know, or at least it sure feels like it.
Exactly. And but, I mean, that's it all starts with story, you know, and that's what they did. They focused on what story they wanted to tell, and how their how the characters were going to take place in that story, you know. And so it's just kind of a credit to their writers and their team that they have executing a clear vision. Something that I think other superhero movies have struggled with a little bit as of late, possibly focusing on some wrong things, but they got it right, and they were able to pull off one of the most influential movies, I think, at least of the last 6 years, in my opinion. So really, really good stuff.
Last thing I'll say is that I'm excited for Black Panther. I can't wait to see it. I think Civil War was great, but Black Panther was by far my favorite part of the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, he was so good in that, and you know, even just the little glimpses of Wakanda.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty psyched. So
definitely.
So we'll have to check back. Check back with me offline afterwards. We'll see how it is.
All right. So with that, we're gonna go into the last part of our section. We've got our guest host here today, Dirk Wood from Woodworks in IDW PDX, and his major first project, although hopefully not his last.
Yeah, let's hope so.
It's a hardcover art and culture magazine. It comes out once a quarter, and the very first one hit my desk about a week ago. It's called Full Bleed, volume number 1. So, Dirk, tell us about just the idea with this, because it's new and it's different. So what's your tent pole? What's your middle guiding principle?
Boy, you know, how long have you got? I can yammer all day about it. It's been my whole life for a few months now. But it's a 200-page quarterly print only. Print only is very important to this whole plan.
Mm-hmm.
Quarterly hardcover. That's one sort of comparison I've been making that's a little bit odd because of the format is different is Rolling Stone. That, you know, Rolling Stone, good dating back to, you know, the late 60s, early 70s, it's ostensibly about music, but you could pick up any copy and there'll be an article about climate change or, you know, guns or whatever the case may be. And it will surprise you page by page in terms of the content. So on some level, it sounds egotistical, but we've trying to do for comics in a weird way what Rolling Stone has done for music. And you know, there are also other sort of things we look at. The old comics journals, the Fantagraphics did. I mean, I loved those things. I'm a big fan of like long form interviews. I still have a copy of the one they did with Joe Sacco on my shelf that, I mean, it's about a, you know, 35-page interview in that thing, you know, and in the age of the internet, you don't see as many deep dives like that out there. And so we really wanted to do something that had that in mind, but with some fun and more frivolous things surrounding it. We don't want the whole thing to be a complete slog to read, but that initially, that's the idea.
Gotcha. Well, and it's so much different than when I think of IDW, to tell you the truth, I think of licensed properties, particularly, you know, stuff like G.I. Joe and a lot of the Disney all ages comics for their, you know, for their stuff for Star Wars and stuff comes out through IDW. But I know kind of the whole idea with the remote office in Portland is to branch off and to do something different. I'll go through and I'll just talk real quick about the stuff that I really enjoyed in this particular issue. Part of the interesting part is that there is a fair amount of graphic novel storytelling in here. There's longer strips like San Diego or Bus that I thought was really good by Ginny and Kendall, and even kind of a serialized comic line or a comic strip called The Lost Boys, The U-Boat Bremen, which leaves on a big cliffhanger, right? But there's also stuff like travel writing, which I thought, you know, there was the one article from Cuba that I thought was really good, but I also really enjoyed A Shot in the Dark by Jarrett Melendez. The basic premise of that piece is that it's a real intimate portrait of a night in at a whiskey bar in Japan. So I don't know, those are the stuff that I really liked. We talked earlier about a kind of retelling from an author named Mark Russell, the histories of Herodotus and the revolt in the Babylonian Empire.
Yeah. which is great.
Well, and you had an interesting story behind that, too, that we talked about before the show.
Yeah, so, I mean, I love Mark's writing, if you guys are familiar with him, and of course, with the Flintstones and Snagglepuss, mm-hmm. and he's doing some great, great stuff. And he did a book for Top Shelf, which is us, of course, that was God is Disappointed in You, sort of a, he retold the Bible in this same style. And it's amazing. If you haven't seen it, it's worth picking up. And he has spot cartoons, illustrations by Shannon Wheeler as well, and it's so good. And they did a sequel to that called Apocrypha Now. And so Mark started posting on Facebook these histories of Herodotus, where he was clearly reading some old Greek mm-hmm. historical book and doing this, giving it the same sort of treatment. So there's a ton of them that he's already written, so I'm hoping to have a bunch more of those in further volumes.
Gotcha.
And just to go back a second to what mm-hmm. you said about Jared's piece for Japan, that it's one of the things, I love that piece, and he's actually, no one knows this yet except Jared and I, but he's doing one for the next one about a trip to Iceland that's going to be equally cool. And I like the idea of these short slice of life type stories. But it's one of the things that's made it a little bit difficult when people tell me, or, you know, they'll say, what kind of a thing are you looking for? Mm-hmm. What's a pitch that I can give you? And I'm like, well, we've got everything from deep interviews with Stephen King to a story about a guy drinking whiskey in Japan to, I mean, the world is your oyster, so to speak. You can, you know, I'm interested in all aspects of culture / life, mm-hmm. which is, it makes it pretty hard to get specific with exactly. I do have specific ideas that for certain artists and creators, but I'm open to all ideas, including gotcha. Just drinking whiskey in Japan.
Hey, man, this corollary just hit me as we were talking. I'm going to kind of zoom back a little bit, and maybe you have something to say on this. One of the things we've said in the show whenever we talk about comics, for people at home and for you, Dirk, Cameron and I are movie people who read comics, right? You know, we're not
sure.
comic book people who go to the movies, right? And so
yeah.
we come to it with that perspective. And one of the things that's been a little disappointing to us is to see the premier publishers go out on a limb with books where they're trying to reach a different demographic. They're trying to tell a story with a different kind of person. Characters like Ironheart or Miss Marvel or these kind of books, they put work into, they put talented people behind, and the market doesn't respond, typically.
Right.
Something that we've been saying is that, you know, if the industry doesn't stretch beyond shooting for Wednesday Warriors.
Right.
The kind of guys who I describe them as the guys that I know that are like that. They buy one of everything, right? You know, they're there to right. buy literally everything that Marvel put out that week. If they never stretch past that and do something different, they're not going to have more than what they've got right now.
Right.
Everything that I saw in this book was something different, right?
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Yeah.
And so I wanted to know if you had any opinion on that, if you had a perspective to lend. You know, we were movie guys looking in, and you've been in the industry right. for quite a long time, and we'd love to hear what you had to say in that direction.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. This has been a big topic of conversation lately with myself and other people in the industry that I know. And, you know, these opinions, of course, are mine, not necessarily IDW's. But I one of the big problems I think that the comics industry at large and the art form itself is facing is, you know, you've got all these, the changing way that people absorb their entertainment for a life. So, I mean, one small part of this problem, I think, is binge watching and how, you know, now I'm a lifelong comic fan and movie fan as well. I mean, for lack of a better term, I have a PhD in comics, whether it's a good idea or not, I do. And so, but I'm the same way. You could say I have a lot in common with your typical Wednesday Warrior. I've spent large chunks of my life doing exactly that. And I have a hard time with the continuity of things. I mean, and if I pick up an issue of, you know, Ms. Marvel or Captain America or whatever, and I have a hard time understanding what's going on, you can imagine how someone coming out from the cold would really be lost.
Right, exactly.
And so, you know, it's not just the big two that have that problem. We have a similar problem ourselves with Transformers and G.I. Joe. You've mm-hmm. got, you know, you have something that has a very deep sort of history to it, and to jump in the middle can sometimes be difficult. But you also want to make things challenging for the people that are there. So to back up to my binge watching thing, let's say I like the Marvel movies a lot. I like the Marvel TV, and I like Marvel comics, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's only so much time in my life that I can devote to absorbing Marvel content.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the movies are a no-brainer. That's easy. I'm excited for Black Panther. I can't wait to jump in and see those. That's easy. The TV becomes more difficult because you get banged with 13 episodes of a new series every few months.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's other TV out there I like. I want to watch Game of Thrones or The Wire or whatever. And so finding time to fit that in. And so even as someone that is a Marvel fan, when you start drilling down to the continuity deep comics, it's got to be taking over 80% of your life at that point, you know? And so it's a really difficult question that Marvel and everybody else is up against, which is that, you know, and then beyond that, you get, just think about the amount of time you or I or anyone else spends on the computer
mm-hmm.
and just flipping through social media or news or whatever you do. It's a time suck that it's hard, you know, and we're at peak. You could make an argument that television has the same problem comics does right now. There's so much great material, and there's only so many hours in the day
mm-hmm.
for the
mm-hmm.
amount of people that are interested. So I don't know. That all sounds pretty fatalistic. I think there are, and what I'm trying to do in some small way, like you said, is sort of tackle that. I want to, you know, I haven't, you know, there's an article, there's an interview with Carla Bozulich in Full mm-hmm. Bleed Volume 1, who's kind of a punk rock icon. Now, I know that 98% of the people that pick that up in a comic shop probably have no idea who she is, but maybe that will bridge some sort of interest there. It'll get a few people looking into her music. Now, and then it works the other way as well. Like maybe somebody comes for the Lost Boys of Yul Brynner, but, oh, they end up reading an article about Alan Moore, and I've never read Watchmen. Maybe I should, you know, I'm making this up as I go, but mm-hmm. you mm-hmm. know what I mean. Trying to expand horizons for new and interesting things or otherwise. But yeah, it is a challenge to be sure. I have my own opinions about Marvel and DC and everything else, but I also am not sure I would want their job. That is difficult, you know.
True that, man.
It's a good problem to have all these great characters and great stories to tell, but man, you know, there's a lot happening at once, I would say.
One of the things about Full Bleed is that, you know, one of your big marketing pushes for Full Bleed has been that it's a 200-page hardcover physical media. And that's really, really cool. That's not something I've never seen, honestly, before, especially not a hardcover 200-page issue of something like this.
Yeah, I don't know if I recommend that to anybody, by the way. It ain't easy.
I bet it's not. And, yeah. You know, it looks like you have, what, 4 volumes so far that are planned.
Yeah, and beyond.
And beyond, of course. But mm-hmm. right now, that's kind of what we're looking at. My question is, obviously it's a lot of work. There's no doubt about that. But what is it like going out and finding your contributors to Full Bleed? You know, you have this huge interview. One of your main selling points for Volume 1 is this interview with Stephen King. Like, how did your interview with Stephen King come about? He's had a really monster year, you know, not only with the huge success of It, of course, for Warner Brothers, but he's also, of course, planning on releasing new material. He's got other adaptions that Netflix has picked up and released, 2 of them within the last year.
Yep.
How did this interview come about for Full Bleed, and what is that like going out and seeking people like Stephen King for Full Bleed?
To answer it sort of more broadly, and then I'll get to Stephen specifically.
Sure, sure, yeah.
You know, that, without a doubt, is the most fun of this entire enterprise. You know, like, I'm a one-man band here pretty much at the moment with help from a lot of people. I mean, there's multiple designers. I've got lots of editorial suggestions and help from people, etc. But if I could get somebody to handle the business and marketing side of this thing and just focus on making the book, I'd have a dream job. You know, I still do.
Sure.
But no, I mean, and that is, I mean, I've a lot of them, the contributors for Volume 1, 2, 3, 4, beyond are people I've known for years. I'll give you a quick example, that Lost Boys of Yul Brynner. Philip Kennedy Johnson, who wrote it, is a guy I've talked to at conventions for years. And he pitched me on that book probably 5 years ago and had a lot of it in the can way back then. And I thought, this looks great, you know. And we looked at publishing it at IDW just as its own comic. And for various reasons, it didn't happen. But it's always been in my mind. And so I reached out to him when I thought, God, that would be so cool to run that serialized, you know, and have that sort of old school type of feature in the magazine. But then other things have just come to me sight unseen. People, you know, I've been pitched, there's a guy named David Winnick. I would call it, you know, it, it's been a big jigsaw puzzle because I've got so much content for the first four volumes. Mm-hmm. There are things I had planned for volume one that ended up moving to volume two.
Sure.
Just for space considerations and thematically and those sorts of things. So David Winnick, he wrote a story about growing up as a dyslexic and how comics essentially solved that problem for him when he was a kid or helped him out. And it's just a cool little, you know, six-pager deal. It ended up getting bumped to volume two, but I'm excited to see it out. But it was just a cold call. He just sent me a pitch and said, I really want to write about this. And I thought, dude, that's a great idea. Send me some samples. So that's a lot of fun. The Stephen King thing, obviously, we're thinking, boy, if something like that is going to help us sell this thing. And it did.
Definitely.
And hopefully we'll continue to do so. But that is through a sort of a crazy group of connections we've got. So we've worked with King before. It's all through Chris Ryle, our head honcho, editor-in-chief, chief creative officer. Brilliant. One of the best people I've ever worked with in my whole career. Super cool guy. But he's worked with Joe Hill, obviously, on Lock and Key.
Right.
Joe is Stephen's son. Stephen King, we also did the Road Rage book that Chris worked on with him. And he just hit him up. He's like, hey, maybe I should hit up Stephen King and see if he wants to do an interview. And I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
you should definitely do that. So we did. And it's funny. At first, I think, I don't want to speak for Mr. King, but I think he was a little hesitant just because he's done so many gazillions of interviews. Sure. He wouldn't be. And Chris's pitch that I think was a great one, he's like, hey, I want to do something a little different. I want it to be about comic books. Your love of the art form, you know, what you read as a kid, the stuff you've done for Marvel, et cetera. And he was like, hey, that sounds fun. Let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I have an interview. I can't say who it is, unfortunately.
Sure.
And that's going to happen that is somewhere up there in the same sort of pantheon. And right now I'm trying desperately to have it happen for volume two. There's a good chance it's going to be volume three, which will be great.
Sure.
But I'm pushing to have it happen for volume two. But there's other great stuff. One thing I'll go ahead and let slide here. We can soft announce this. We're going to be doing a Hernandez Brothers thing in volume two that I'm looking forward to. The Love and Rockets guys. That's
cool.
You know, here, don't spread the word just yet.
Sure.
Okay.
If you listen to this podcast, maybe you'll know. But, yeah, that's that, you know, boy, if I could have an interview with someone as big as Stephen King in every volume, you know, we'd be in good shape. But, you know, I think we brought a lot of King fans in, actually. The official Facebook page tweeted it out and did the Facebook posts and all that kind of stuff. So, and we saw a lot of orders come in, you know, and hopefully that you get some King readers that made, you know, read Lost Boys of the U-Bo Bremen and say, man, I've been ignoring comics, you know? I should go check out a comic shop. So that's the idea anyway.
Do you have anything else you want to talk about for Volume 2? Just to kind of...
Let's see. I'll tell you, this may be in Volume 2 and it may be in Volume 3. And this is just a complete aside. But I, much like the Carla Bozulich thing, I interviewed a musical hero of mine this week, this last week, that, you know, a lot of people won't know. But his name's Sam Coombs. He's in a band called Quasi. That is a longtime Portland underground mainstay kick-ass band, and I'm a huge fan. So it was so great to have this opportunity. You know, like all the it took me a while to sort of get in the vibe of like, hey, I got a magazine now, I can ask people for interviews. You know, and so I just hit him up. And so I'd love to interview. And so he came in on Friday. We had a blast. I think it's going to be a super cool little interview. He sent me a bunch of his artwork that's crazy and cool. So that's fun. I'm going to push for that in volume two. The other thing I'll go ahead and say, there's a lot I can't tell you about just yet because we're going to go wide with it soon. But this is just a fun thing, too. Gideon Kendall, who did the San Diego or Bus story in there, that is super... I love his art style. He's got that sort of old-school Jack Davis Mad Magazine.
Right.
You know, it's an awesome style. And I'm going to make my comic book writing debut. I've actually never published any comic work. And so it's just a quick little 10-pager.
Yeah.
But it's about... I saw a band called The Replacements...
Yeah.
That sure. They played in the very building I'm sitting in now in 1987. And I saw, and it was a legendary show where the bass player dove out the window. they ended up apologizing to Portland on their records. They wrote a song about it. It's this famous show. And so I just did a quick little story about my experience with my friend being at that show when I was 17, and Gideon's drawing it, and it's turning out amazing.
That's dope.
Like, I'm super excited about that.
Very cool.
But other than that, just you're going to see for part two of Lost Boys of Yubo Bremen's going to be in there, which looks equally awesome to the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of snuck the Hernandez brothers thing in there, and then there's some other cool stuff coming at you.
Cool. Well, one of the things about Full Bleed is that it's completely ad-free. That's one of the things, that you mentioned on your Kickstarter campaign.
Yep.
You state that the Kickstarter campaign is one of the reasons why you can keep it like that. Can you kind of talk about a little bit, how did you approach the idea of Full Bleed being almost kickstarted, and that it being, very much supported by the fans and the people that are willing to support Full Bleed? What was kind of the decision-making process for it to be a Kickstarter campaign?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Ted, our CEO, has talked about this quite a bit. It's not because IDW needs the money.
Sure.
And so it would be disingenuous to say that we do. It's and oddly, we're seeing this now, hopefully, and here's the contention and the whole idea for this plan. Now, it's something no one's ever tried before in this way, which is that we did a Kickstarter that you can either support as a fan or you can support it as a retailer, and then it would be shipped to your store directly with your regular Diamond comic shipments. Mm-hmm. And so the idea for this Kickstarter wasn't necessarily to sell a ton on Kickstarter, although it doesn't hurt, but was to get attention on this project in a way that it wouldn't have otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then bear with me as I sort of talk this out, but essentially, let's say you're a comic shop and we put Full Bleed in with a full page ad and previews. Hey, check this out. It's going to be this cool new thing. Let's say you order two copies. Mm-hmm. And then, okay, and then it does what it does and it sells, and then you order the next one or you don't, and yada, yada. The idea is, okay, now maybe those two people that would have bought it in the comic shops, they bought it on Kickstarter. So you think that that comic shop is out of those two sales. But in reality, what we want to do is all of a sudden we want five people going into that comic shop that are interested in buying Full Bleed instead of the two. And so then you sell a couple on Kickstarter, and then you've raised the awareness to the point that people go into the comic shops looking for it. And so just anecdotal evidence yesterday on Facebook, mm-hmm. and Twitter, I got tagged in a bunch of stuff, and there were all these people like, oh man, I saw this in the shop yesterday. I'm going back to get it tomorrow. And like, hey, there was a one retailer that posted like, these are flying,
mm-hmm.
and like that's, hopefully that's the case. And it's not just a couple of stores, but that is the idea that by the time that book hit the shelf, people are like, oh, I've heard of this. I've seen that cover art. That sounds cool. Because not everyone's going to buy into the first. So that's the idea. And it really was a sincere attempt to raise the profile of this thing and make it work in comic shops in a way that it wouldn't have otherwise. The worry would be that, as a lot of people know, it's not the greatest time in the direct market right now. And, we're meeting this next week with Comics Pro and a bunch of retailers to hopefully be a part of the solution to make things even better, and really sort of pick things up. But in some small way, that was my stab at that. Like let's, and it's not necessarily the easiest message, because the first thing a comic shop thinks is, oh, great, you're selling this on Kickstarter. That mm-hmm. sucks.
Sure.
And it's like, yeah, but the worry is we would have solicited it a normal way and sold 900 copies, and volume two sells 600 copies, and we're out of business, because it's an expensive proposition. And we want this to be a long-term, mainstay. So, there's not a lot of shops that are going to sell 200 of these, but if every shop in America can sell a few, that's good for them and good for us, hopefully.
Right,
that's
on.
The idea.
Definitely.
And if we bring a few Stephen King fans in the comic shops.
Exactly.
That's it. Yeah.
When we saw in the press releases announcing Woodworks and announcing the remote office up in Portland, kind of light on facts, because I'm assuming, because no one was exactly sure at the time exactly what you were going to be doing up there.
That's part of it.
Yeah. Tell us about the future. Tell us about Woodworks and about is Woodworks just about Full Bleed? Is it about that and a lot of other stuff? Kind of fill us in.
Well, there you go. It's, what's funny is you're absolutely right. We had some Full Bleed was, we knew was coming out of the gate going to be the first project. And there are some things in the works I unfortunately can't discuss just yet. But some of it is going to make sense right out of the gate, which is that, you know, we had a little bit more aggressive of slate of stuff that was going to be coming fast, but it became really obvious really quickly that running a 200-page quarterly hardcover magazine. I've explained it this way to a few people. You know, you flip open a magazine and on the left, there's that huge list of people that worked on it. You know, that list is essentially me and Ted. So it's become a real beast in a good way. And so we thought, you know what, let's hold off on a few of these projects and really make sure Full Bleed launches and starts off with the kind of, you know, momentum that we want it to, which seems to definitely be working. But as we're doing that, you know, you can imagine a year from now, we're going to have 800 pages of content, you know. 2 years from now, we're going to have 1,600 pages of content just on the Full Bleed stuff.
Yeah.
And that's going to be, you know, for example, Lost Boys of U-Bo Bremen, I can tell you right now, you know, that's a five-part story. That's going to be its own book that's collected at the end.
Okay.
And so, you know, there's a few other serialized things. And then you can probably look forward to things like the best of the fiction, the best of the comics, maybe an art book, sort of all spiraling out of Full Bleed itself as sort of like the standard bearer in the line.
Gotcha.
Now, that said, there are a few things actually that are super related, maybe by some of the same creators. Mm-hmm. Some of them actually aren't. There's some other things sort of in the interview space where we're thinking about collecting big things that are artist specific and that sort of thing. They'll be word on more soon. But the idea with Full Bleed is that is essentially, you know, we wanted to prove what our sensibility was before we came out with a bunch of other stuff. So once Full Bleed has sort of established what IDW PDX is doing,
yeah,
when we solicit other projects, it'll be like, oh, okay, that makes sense. It's sort of like Full Bleed, but like this, you know.
Gotcha.
So there's a bunch coming, but right now I'm just trying to keep my head above water. You know, Volume 1... I think Volume 2 already has been infinitely easier to put together, and it's going to be, I think, even better than the first one, because, you know, it just, the amount of things I had to learn on the, you know, we had to create the contracts. What do we pay people for stuff? You know, obviously IDW has a big history in publishing, but we've never done a magazine. You know, how do we get photos? How do we attribute those to people? What, you know? And so if you look at that volume, every little legal line you see anywhere probably represents 40 emails, you know. It was a beast to get to that point. But now we've established a lot of that stuff. And so Volume 2 is, we're just chugging along at a much better pace. So, yeah, I think that you're going to see a lot of stuff coming soon.
Well, Dirk, hey, thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Of course, guys.
You know, you're our first guest host, so we really appreciate you making the time to come.
I didn't know that.
Absolutely.
Great.
So, with that, next week is definitely going to be very Black Panther-centric. So, if you're excited, we're excited. You know, we're recording this on Thursday, and we're leaving from this camera, and you're leaving from this to go stand in line, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've got a night ahead of me.
You lucky devils. I'm excited.
So with that, I have been Sam Drake.
And I'm Cameron Bose.
I'm Dirk Wood.
And we'll see you next time in the Hero Cafe. Thanks a lot for coming along. We'll see you later.
Peace.
Thanks, guys.